Welcome to the Startup Help Desk, your source for answers to questions about starting companies, building businesses, and the meaning of life. We have a panel here of successful founders and entrepreneurs who are here to share our experience with you and answer questions submitted by people just like yourselves. Today, we're covering all sorts of questions about raising money from venture capitalists. How do you raise money from VC? What do you do with VC? All these sorts of things. We're going to tackle those questions today. If you have questions, we would love to hear them. Our website is thestartuphelpdesk.com. Our Twitter handle is thestartuphd. All the questions you'll hear were submitted there. So while you're listening to the episode, head over there and submit some questions we can answer in future episodes. But for now, let's jump in. I'm Sean Burns. I've been a founder for about 20 years, made lots of mistakes, built companies like Flurry and Outlier.ai along the way. And I'm joined, as usual, by our illustrious panel here at the Help Desk, Nick and Ash.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ash Rust, and I'm a pre-seed investor based in San Francisco. I mostly invest in B2B companies based in the UK, US, and Canada through a fund I started called Sterling Road. I've also worked at other places like Trinity Ventures and Bullpen Capital as an advisor. Before investing, I was a founder myself, most notably an early employee at the social media company Clout, as well as the co-founder and CEO of SendUp. These days, I spend most of my time coaching founders, and I've helped more than 1,500 startups over the years.
Hey, this is Nick Meliones. I am co-founder and CEO of a startup called Navi. The skills that make the best founders are the same skills that everyone needs to succeed in the world of tomorrow. We help people and organizations build those skills. I've supported hundreds of folks and startups on their innovation quests, and I'm excited to get into today's questions.
And Nick is excited up until he hears the questions, in which case he gets very afraid and we force him to answer questions.
That's right. That's
anyway,
exactly.
So that's how we roll here on the help desk. But
and we're as actually going to call it fear factor, but someone else had that.
So all the questions, as said before, submitted by founders like yourself. And let's get started. Questions about fundraising. First question up, is a safe or priced equity round better for early stage startup with product market fit? As a quick clarification, if you're not familiar, priced equity round mean the investors are buying shares directly. A safe is more of a convertible note instrument where it's kind of like a form of debt. So is a safe or priced equity round better for early stage startup with product market fit? Ash, you're the investor among us. What do you think?
Well, unsurprisingly, there is no right answer here. It is situational most of the time. The safe is faster. It's cheaper. You can download it from the Y Combinator website right now. But it's debt. So the cap is not a real price. You can put a price on it, and it can be a post-money valuation. So you've got a rough idea of how much equity you're giving away. But that dilution gets harder to track over time. Equity rounds is ultimately where you end up. But the initial legal cost of maybe $10,000 at a minimum means that it's not always the best option. If you're trying to close something quickly or there's a risk that you might not close more than a five-figure amount, you may not want to even pursue an equity round initially. If you get a lot of interest, maybe you get a seed fund or a Series A fund to give you a term sheet for a priced equity round, that usually ends up happening. It's very rare that you're going to go backwards from that and end up negotiating for it to instead be a safe. It does happen, but it's very, very rare. Most of the time, founders want that equity round to occur because it clears all the safes, convertible notes, and other debt that are currently hanging around and could later influence your future rounds. So the other thing, though, to consider is that the priced round does come with governance in most cases. So if you accept a priced round, if someone buys a big chunk of the company, a big chunk of the shares, not just assigns a safe, then they're usually going to want a board seat. And that kind of forces the company to grow up almost immediately. So if you're not ready for that, then you may want to opt for the safe because that's going to avoid having to do those meetings in a more serious manner. So yeah, no right answer. I wish it were different, but it depends on the situation.
Ash, quick question for you. One of the reasons that people often do go for saves is they like the idea of a rolling close, meaning that if you do a price equity round, everybody has to close, meaning they execute the documents and wire the money on the same day. But with a safe, you can close people over the period of a month, maybe a few months, as people can sign the safe and invest over time. From the perspective of an investor, is the rolling close a good or a bad thing? I can understand why it's probably a good thing for the founder, but from the investor's perspective, what do you think?
Well, I think that it does make it easier for you in terms of you can decide whenever you want, right? As long as the round is open, you still have the opportunity to make a decision. The equity round having some deadline, which is usually relatively short because you've got a term sheet in place already, that's going to force you to make a decision sooner. So for the investor, putting a date with a priced equity round on it is likely a little bit tougher. So I think that, you know, if you're a seed stage investor, you probably want the rolling close as well. So you can keep watching the round as it develops and then jump in whenever you want. But yeah, you don't necessarily want your companies that you already invested in to keep doing that because they're going to keep making the dilution more complicated and keep diluting you as well.
Ash, I got a follow-up question on this. A SAFE is something that is very friendly, particularly for founders. Nonetheless, this question is asking about SAFE versus price equity for a startup that has achieved product market fit. That means they've figured something out. And so adding some strategic fuel, guidance, and governance could be interesting here. Is that something that is a benefit that comes with the price round where you are adding, ideally, a fantastic investor to the board who can be able to accelerate this next stage for you?
Yes, but most startups don't get that, right? Most startups don't get the investors that they really, really want because those people are in incredibly high demand. So most of the time, you take the money that's offered in almost all cases. Maybe 10% of startups, 80% of the time, get that. You know, so I would argue that in the vast majority of cases, my experience with board members is that they're not adding an awful lot. I think that corporate governance is important as guardrails when people start behaving really badly. But by and large, these people are mostly trying to sound smart in front of other people rather than there's real outcomes that are improving the trajectory of the company. Sean, though, has built more companies than me. Sean, what do you think? Is there a scenario where your board has really stepped up and changed everything about your company? Especially
well,
in the seed stage.
I'd like to point out that this idea of people trying to sound intelligent to other people sounds a little bit like a podcast. So let's be careful, guys. We don't want to undermine ourselves here too much. I have actively taken worse terms from better investors, and I have been lucky that in many cases my board has stepped up to make meaningfully positive impacts on the trajectory of the company. The problem ends up being that until you've done this for a while and you know a lot of investors, it's very difficult to judge who those investors will be and what board is it that will actually have a positive impact on your company, I think. It was only after doing this for about a decade that I felt that I could trust my own judgment when it came to those sorts of questions. So I agree with Ash. Most of the time, you're just taking the money that's offered. And if you're lucky enough to be picky, hopefully you have advisors or mentors maybe who can help you with that kind of stuff. I don't know. I don't have any good answers.
Or friends who have a podcast.
I mean, you know, podcasts, of course, or we're very smart. We just don't sound smart. We are smart. We're definitely smart. Listen to us. Pay attention to us. Oh, man. Okay. We have a lot
next
of questions
question.
About fundraising. Nick, what else we got, man?
All right, let's do it. This is a question we got from a founder. And this question's packed with a couple different layers here. Question is, what is the average recommended / common amounts to raise for different types of rounds? So for instance, for a pre-seed, a seed, Series A, Series B, and Series C. So what are common amounts given those types of rounds there? Ash?
Yeah, so definitely a controversial answer coming here. I think that a lot of people will message me afterwards and say, no way, that's the old barriers, or wow, I can't believe you're saying that these things are so much. Obviously, these goalposts move all the time. My view of this is based on mostly investing in London and San Francisco. So I do see two very different markets in terms of pricing. Putting this all in dollar amounts, I'd say the classic pre-seed round is still about $250K. To 750K. That's where a lot of people start. That's going to be their fallback plan. If they don't get a term sheet for a priced equity round, that's where you're going to end up. Most people always go out, though, for a seed round. That's the initial goal, even if you're at the very earliest stages. And that's going to be usually in the $1 to $3 million range. Even today, I'd say that that's the classic seed round. Most companies coming out of Y Combinator are going to raise 1.5 to 2.5 million, regardless of what cap they're raising at. So if you call that a classic seed round, that is what that's going to look like. Series A, most founders are usually aiming to raise 5 to 10 million. That's the line that they choose for that. So that's going to be giving up 20 to 33% of the company. So you're looking at a valuation probably in the 15 to 50 million range, depending on how successful you are and how much demand there is there. Series B, you start to get up to much larger numbers. So these are going to be eight figures only, 15 to 25 million. And oftentimes, once you get to the Series B and Series C, the amount of equity that you're selling varies greatly. Again, it depends very much on demand and the macro environment. Sometimes you might have to sell 30% of the company. Other times, there might be so much demand, you only have to sell 10% of the company. So anything can really happen at those later stages. It becomes even less fixed, and obviously an area where I have a lot less experience as well. So those early ones are where you should probably listen to me. Pre-seed 250 to 750, seed 1 to 3, Series A 5 to 10.
So Ash, for people that aren't as familiar with this, they might not realize that the valuations of startup companies is actually a byproduct of how much you're raising and the ownership that the investor wants to buy. Can you walk people a little bit through that? Because you hear all these numbers in the press about $50 million valuation, $100 million valuation, $500 million valuation, and they don't realize that that valuation was a side effect of the funding. So can you walk them through how that works?
Yeah. So ordinarily in a priced equity round, especially these larger ones where they're going to be 5 million plus, investors are probably buying between 20 and 33% of the company. So if somebody wants to raise 10 million, then the valuation of the company is going to be between 30 and 50 million, pretty much guaranteed, because that's what the VCs and other investors want to own in terms of their percentage after everything is said and done. So yes, you can have these eye-popping numbers, but they, as you say, are much more a function of the ownership requirements of an investor combined with the demand of multiple investors, thus pushing up the valuation rather than everyone agreeing that this is the right price for the company.
And I still remember the first time I learned about this, that the price is a byproduct of how much money you need to raise and how much they want to own. Instead of choosing a price first, the price is a byproduct of the process. It blew my mind. I mean, it makes sense because, again, we're talking about early stage companies here. Their valuations, I mean, who knows? They could be up, down. But I still remember that just blowing my mind. And you're right. It's the byproduct is you see all these huge valuation rounds now. Ash, is there ever a time when it's in your best interest to raise less than those amounts for those rounds?
Almost always. I think
interesting.
I mean, I'm an investor, so I'm always asking people to take more money, right? Especially from me. But the best companies don't need to do that. If you're growing fast, if you're generating revenue, the last thing you need is to do more equity sales. You want to keep all of that and save it for when you need, you know, to expand so you can raise capital on your own terms. So yeah, I mean, I think especially nowadays, especially I've been in this game for a while. I've got a lot of friends who are coming down for their second and third company, and they're in an awful lot of demand. Nobody's raising small amounts of money, even in times like this that are, you know, early 2024 and the macro environment isn't great. People are raising $2, $3, $4 million for brand new companies. And that in most cases is probably going to prove to be too much. Retrospectively, most founders look back on that and say, oh, we probably sold too much of the company. Similarly, they do a Series A, they get a fancy investor, a bunch of people flood them afterwards and say, oh, please, can I invest? You don't need the money. You already decided you didn't need the money. You create some inflated false valuation to basically take the money at something that isn't particularly dilutive. But again, you're still filling your coffers and changing your behavior. So yeah. I think a lot of people take too much money, and the reason why America is built on small businesses is because you don't need a lot of cash actually to build a business.
Yeah, I like it. I think there's been a really strong theme, particularly given economic climate that can be challenging, where it's demanding that founders find ways to put in the hard work to generate revenue. And the magic from that, of course, is you in fact end up making your business more defensible, more interesting to investors. And of course, you end up validating your biggest assumptions, i.e. there's an economic model that can scale all through not fundraising.
And nobody can make decisions for you, right? You are no longer reliant on someone like me deciding that I want to fund you in order to survive.
But you do want to fund us because you do want us to survive. You love the podcast,
but obviously,
right?
Jeremy, sorry. Back. I'm here. I'm sorry. It was just a moment. If you're a silly rude LP, that was actually Sean doing an impression of me.
out of curiosity, Ash, the follow-up question to this question is obviously, how do I know what stage I'm at? How do I know if I'm a pre-seed or seed or series A company to know I fall into this range? This is a question I get a lot that I don't have a good answer to, because I feel like the rounds that you mentioned are pretty common, but what it takes to qualify for each seems to be a moving target.
Yeah, I actually have no idea. Nobody does know. So the way we solve this problem is you actually have to go out and raise all three of the first ones that I spoke about. So you go out with I call it plan A, plan B, and plan big VC. So you have your seed round plan, your fallback pre-seed plan, and then your series A plan, because you just have no idea. You may happen to say the magic words to someone who writes a $5 million check that's like, all I need is this deck and your dream and I'm ready to go. Similarly, you might be generating a bunch of revenue, growing really fast, but you're going to have to grind it out with angel investors in your local town because no one else will talk to you. I just don't know. So you go out with those three plans and then you measure the response rates across those three groups. Are angel investors responding to you? Are seed investors responding to you? Are Series A investors responding? Are they wanting second and third meetings immediately? If so, spend more time with them. If not, go back to the people who are excited. And that's how you decide. There's no way of knowing otherwise. It's a famous problem.
A funny side note, I was raising what I thought was a Series A in 2018, and I thought we had the Series A metrics, which we did, and I wanted to raise $5 million, and I talked to a bunch of Series A VC firms, and they all told me the same thing. I love it. This is great. We don't write checks that small. And it was a funny conundrum because I knew I was a Series A and I thought a $5 million was a good Series A. And they all told me that they just don't write checks that small. And we ended up closing the round, but it was quite hilarious that the market was telling me, no. Sure, you're a Series A company, but you have to raise more money. We're not going to pay attention to you. I mean,
And dilute the amount that they wanted, right? That's the other key thing. So you couldn't sell 10% of the company there unless you're in a position of massive strength. You must sell at least 20-25%. That's a really important differentiator in terms of those next stages, right? Because you were probably thinking that it was going to be a great situation on the round, but all of a sudden these new rules come in.
Yeah. I mean, we were looking to sell 20% of the company. What we ran into is back in 2018, this may not be true now, a lot of these funds had raised so much money that they couldn't deploy $5 million checks. It was just too small of a check in their portfolio. If you have a $300 million fund, $5 million checks are kind of noise. And so,
but they didn't want to give you the higher valuation then?
I didn't want a higher valuation. Another episode, I wanted the lower valuation. I'm a firm believer in let's not get our valuation ahead of ourselves. So, but that's my personal opinion. That was my challenge. So you're right. I could have accepted a higher valuation, but I didn't want to. Okay, Ash, last question. We need to make sure we get through our three questions today. This is a question that we all get all the time, and I'm sure you have all the answers. How do I meet investors to pitch?
All right. Well, there is a sliding scale of quality. So if an entrepreneur in my portfolio sends me an introduction request, it is near 90% that I'm going to accept that because that's a very, very strong recommendation. Just below that is other investors that I work with closely. Those are a pretty good route. If you don't have any of those two groups in your network or directly connecting you to a potential investor, and that is obviously most of the time, then it is totally fine to go to cold outreach. You can generate a roughly 30% response rate with personalized cold emails, not hi, Ash, followed by template, actually doing the research. And so for someone like me, for example, doing basic research would tell you either just by looking down at my LinkedIn profile or going to our website that I don't want you to email me, but you can fill in a form in less than 60 seconds and that's going to give me the information that I want. So you can do that little bit of research and drastically increase your chance of a response rate. Conferences and events, you know, Nick mentioned many times on the podcast in the past, hackathons and those kinds of things. Those are great places to run into investors who are usually scoping out for teams themselves, bigger conferences, you know, Dreamforce, those kinds of things. Oftentimes you can get free tickets or discount tickets if you're a student or an early stage founder, maybe through your accelerator program or some kind of other network. A lot of people use press, which is expensive. But if you're generating press because you have something interesting, obviously it's very low cost in terms of earned media. But the best mechanism, always the best mechanism outside of those warm intros from other entrepreneurs in my portfolio, is by having great customer referrals. If founders in my portfolio are talking about a product that they love, or I'm seeing other people talk about that product online, that's how founders get those inbound requests from VCs as well. So lots of different ways to do this, and it really just depends on what you think you have a personal affinity for or where your network currently lies.
Yeah, I like this. And have you seen anything that's just been, would say, really creative ways to get your attention? Or do you find creative attempts like that that break the norm to in fact be distracting and not something that resonates? I'm thinking a creative email, for instance, with a video where they're talking directly to you. Are there things like that, or is that just noise and not something that really is impactful for you?
You know, for some of our programs, we do actually ask people to record a video, and I find that really valuable. So I do advocate for doing those kinds of things, especially in the Zoom first world. I think the most common quote unquote creative thing that people do is they get the address of the fund and then they send me like an overnight FedEx document, you know, so it says like urgent on it or something. So you got to open it up and it's just their pitch deck. But no, I mean, I don't want to receive any information in any other format than the one that I've already decided on, right? That's my selfish reality. And so when people do things that are creative, it's not necessarily something that I would personally choose. Does it get my attention? Possibly. But you are risking a negative feeling as well. And I would just say that I think we're, for the last 2 or 3 years, and maybe we're unusual, but I doubt it. You know, if you go through our specific channel, there's nobody that hasn't had a response within 7 days for at least 2 years now. So we're quite proud of being able to give people at least a response within that time period if you go through the channel that we're asking you to use. So yeah, don't make it rocket science. I think people spend too much time perhaps thinking about that kind of thing versus just playing the numbers game and personalizing the emails and saying the real reason why they want to talk to somebody.
Out of curiosity, Ash, how many pitches would you estimate you get per day?
It probably averages 2 or 3 new founder groups that I meet every day. Now, sometimes I might meet 20 in an afternoon because I go to a speaking event and they all ask questions, and you know, maybe I get the list afterwards. We get sent a lot of lists as well where we might filter that down. So, and those lists might include, you know, video pitches. So it's kind of hard to measure in the modern world, because when I first cut my teeth, that would just be the number of meetings that you had on the calendar that day. Nowadays, there's a lot of different ways that you can assess a company pretty quickly. But meetings, at least 2 or 3 a day on average.
Yeah, so this is a general observation. I feel like a lot of people try to optimize for how do I meet investors? How do I get creative with outreach? And what they don't think too much about is once you get the investor's attention, how do you keep it? I mean, investors see so many pitches. I can't tell you how many pitches I see that they're just all the same. There's nothing that stands out. The minute I close it, I don't remember it. And so I often think that instead of worrying so much about finding lots of investors, focusing on how to make your pitch memorable and interesting, that when you do get lucky enough to get investors' attention, that you make the most of it is absolutely more important. There are investors out there, as Ash said, lots of ways to reach them. But make sure if you do reach them and they do give you the time to pay attention, that you grab that attention, you don't let go. And that's something you cannot spend too much time on.
That's the most important point of the podcast today. And I think within that, you have to remember that the easiest way to grab that attention is not necessarily to have a bunch of growth or a fancy company. Like, it's just the pitch. You get up there with a Steve Jobs caliber pitch, you get all the money you want. And it happens over and over again. And all these founders with massive growth, massive revenue, but no communication skills are asking, well, why can't we raise? Why can't we raise? Like, that's the reason. Like, if you don't pitch properly, people won't be interested. But if you pitch like a virtuoso, you'll be peeling money off your cheeks.
And we have to end the podcast on that. That was a good point. So If you have questions on how to pitch, you know what you should do? Head over to thestartuphelpdesk.com or on Twitter at thestartuphd and submit questions so we can do an episode about how to pitch effectively.
Oh, yeah.
That would actually be quite a lot of fun, but it's up to you. We only answer questions that you submit, so you got to submit those questions if we're going to do that. In the meantime,
our life is in your hands.
We are out of time today. Ash, thanks for sharing your investor experience, and Nick, thanks for your wisdom here on the podcast.
Oh, great time. Thank you both.
Thanks for putting up with me, guys.
And we will be back. But for now, the Startup Help Desk is closed. We look forward to seeing you in the future. But for now, good luck in building your business.